You're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. In episode 9, season 1, I spoke with the amazing trumpet player Karen Donnelly, who's the principal trumpet of the National Arts Centre Orchestra Canada, which is the orchestra that I'm a member of. And during the interview, she played a little bit for us. She talked about her role as a mentor to other women brass players, her advice about practicing, and perspectives on her life in music. All of these interviews are available in video format and the links in the description. Please follow this podcast and share, and you can hear about all the new episodes coming out with a wide range of interesting musicians. Hi, welcome Karen Donnelly, principal trumpet of the National Arts Center Orchestra, educator, and lots of things. So welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I was wondering if you'd be willing to play for us today, and if so, maybe we could start with a little music.
Sure, absolutely. I'm working on this new piece I discovered, actually, thanks to Facebook and the pandemic. there's many people, as you know, putting their content online. And this amazing trumpet player that I follow, Jim Wilt, he's a member of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. He played this piece. It's called Miles Per Hour. Mm-hmm. And it's written by an American composer, Regina Harris Baiocchi. I hope I said that right. Mm-hmm. She's an American, yeah. And this is an homage to Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. So it's a cool piece because it can be either solo trumpet or a duet. And it's a call and response kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where one player is playing on stage and the other player is playing off stage, but it also can be solo, where the person can create the effect of tone change with the famous harmon mute that Miles Davis, that sound that Miles Davis. So anyway, it's a new piece for me. So here's just the first portion of it. Okay. Okay. It goes on from there.
Wow. But that was so, so gorgeous. You achieved so many incredible color changes. Well, it sounded like 5 trumpet players back and forth.
Well, thank you.
That cool technique you're doing, what's it called? Like, I don't know what that is, since I'm a violinist.
What?
Well, you had a sort of a rattling, it must be a tonguing thing.
Yeah, that's just tonguing with the mute. It sounds more percussive than normally. Mm-hmm. Like it, you know, it would be normally, but like there's a normal notes, you know, but with the mute, it's like.
It's like another very... effect, but of course I don't know the name of it. It's like a growl.
Yeah, that's the color that this Harmon Mute offers. Okay. The way it's designed, there's an immense amount of resistance. Mm-hmm. So it does create that like buzzy sound. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, Miles Davis, famous, you know.
That yeah, it's a great piece. Yeah. I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
Well, it goes on a little bit more, but within the same kind of, and it's basically it's touching on. She wanted to sort of show the lineage of great American trumpet players. Mm-hmm. You know. Anyway,
so
really cool.
Yeah, you'd mentioned if it's done with two trumpet players, one is off stage, which is something you often have to do, and sometimes you've been out in the hall or up.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to play with the orchestra when that happens, right?
Yeah.
You do a great job, but I can't imagine doing it myself.
Well, yeah, it's a weird sensation, I'm not going to lie. And there's always, everybody's got like funny stories, and I actually have one too, of playing off stage, you know. Once I was playing actually in the third balcony at the NAC to play an offstage like fanfare thing. Mm-hmm. And there was like a conference or something going on up there. It was during the dress rehearsal and I could hear somebody, but I had to do my like little Leonore 3, mm-hmm. you know? So then of course somebody comes along and says, "You can't play that here." And I'm like, "Well, actually, I kind of have to. It's short, but so it was sort of funny. Everyone has those stories of like trying to get back in the hall and the door's locked and, you know. But there are elements of it is one of the, it's fun, but it's also very weird because you just have to go on pure faith and mm-hmm. then also feedback from people who are in the hall or on the stage. Like, am I at the right pitch? Because the farther you go, like mm-hmm. Doppler effect, the lower the pitch
right.
goes.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust. And then if your timing is on or off, you know, composers often write that in or make so that it's like just often like the Leonore 3, it's like the orchestra stops and then you hear this mm-hmm. trumpet call. Or like Pines of Rome, the orchestra, it's just this bed of mm-hmm. of sound, the catacombs movement of sound underneath this beautiful lyrical offstage trumpet. Beautiful solo, yeah.
Yeah, I must say I've had the privilege of hearing your playing since we were at McGill University, and I've always loved the lyrical quality of your playing.
Thank you.
And maybe you could talk about your role as principal trumpet, because it is a leadership position within the orchestra. You're not just a soloist.
Yep. It's definitely I'm definitely the leader of the trumpet section, obviously. Like that role is indicated in our collective agreement, but there's also the sort of unwritten rule, but everybody knows it, that I'm also the leader of the brass section. Mm-hmm. And I do find that, I do find my most successful leadership, I think it's just by leading by example. Mm-hmm. It's been where I feel like I have been, it's been most successful for me. I mean, over the years, I remember being at McGill and the teachers there when I was playing first trumpet in the orchestra, and they were like, "You're the leader, and you got to get these guys together, and you got to," like, really old school, like, mm-hmm. "I got to crack the whip." And you know, and you got to tell those guys what to do and that kind of thing. And it just, I personally feel like that's, it doesn't bring in the collaborative element that is the most rewarding part of being an orchestra member and being a musician. That's the most rewarding part of the job for me is the teamwork together to mm-hmm. go for this one project of the concert. Mm-hmm. So I prefer by just like that they're all professionals and they're all on top of their work. And that I just, if the more prepared and the more on top of it I am, that if I can just play consistently in the way that, you know, and hopefully the conductor is happy with what he or she is hearing, then the example is set and it's easy for everybody to follow. Like when I'm solid, it's just easy for everybody to follow. But I will note that I just noticed that nobody really cares that I am the leader of the brass section, and then, unless there's trouble.
Yeah.
and then it's like, well, you're the boss. You gotta make the decision. It's like, ah, yeah.
You come from a really big family.
Yep.
And when things are working at its best in an orchestra, I feel like it is like a family feeling because you're in usually for a very long time, right?
Yeah.
It's not unusual for people to play with the same orchestra for 30, 40, 50 years even.
Especially our job. Mm-hmm. Such a good job.
Yeah.
Nice place to work, nice place to live. It's great. Yeah. Yep. It is definitely, yeah, we definitely, I was actually just talking to one of my brass colleagues yesterday, and we were commenting on how, you know, we have this really great idea of communication, and we're sort of like, we just always try to work for the better of the project and help each other. When someone is sort of struggling, especially like personally, mm-hmm. something's going on, like we gather around and we mm-hmm. we support that person and we lift them up. We support that guy, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a really great, like you say, family. Yeah.
And I felt during this pandemic, there's a real sense of community of musicians across the internet, you know, meeting people that you never would expect to meet. And we have this commonality, whether people are amateurs or professionals, yeah. we love music and it's a yeah. daily practice for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've been leading trumpet players, I believe, in daily warm-ups
or weekly. Yeah. Weekly. Yeah. I will say it's kind of my golden gem mm-hmm. of this pandemic. It's like sort of the most, one of the most joyful moments that has come. Is I just started this group. We meet once a week. It initially started last May, I think, with my students and my former students. Mm-hmm. Because I was getting, like, it had only been 2 months at that point, and I was mm-hmm. getting tired of, like, it's lonely practicing yeah. by yourself at home. It's boring, you know? So I just thought, hey, come on, guys and gals, let's go, you know? Let's do this. So we're on Zoom, and everyone is muted except whoever's leading. And now it's been going on. So as this pandemic went on, I realized, well, one of my former students says, hey, you know, so-and-so is sort of having a tough time. Is it okay if I invite that person? I was like, absolutely. Then I was like, oh, okay, this is a bigger thing. So as it went on, so I created this private Facebook group. And I do have some people that I contact through email as well. But because they're not on Facebook, but there's over 100 people in the group, mm-hmm. but not that everybody comes to the weekly session, but I record it mm-hmm. and upload it. So some people who can't make the time, cause it's like, whatever, they watch this. It's really fun. They watch mm-hmm. the little YouTube video and we just play regular exercises together, metronome going, and like I said, the leader, and now I've had many, many people, friends, I've asked them to share their practice routine mm-hmm. with the group, and you know, so we have this like incredible collection. Actually, one of the people, and they're from all across Canada too, mm-hmm. like at one point, we literally had coast to coast, like mm-hmm. on one day. It's just timing. Some people, sometimes there's lots of people from Alberta or Saskatchewan, or of course, there's a lot of Ontario, you know. Mm-hmm. But now it's one of my friends, she showed the binder that she has of all the PDFs, because people load the PDFs onto mm-hmm. the, so we have all the same material. She has this binder this thick of new material. Like, and every day she's like, whose routine will I do today? You know? I'll do, you know, so it's fun. And it also is, it's pretty nerdy, pretty trumpet nerdy, mm-hmm. but it's also kind of community, you know, like we miss the hanging out and the talking, hey, what's that mutant? Hey, brr, 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 you know, mm-hmm. so it's a little bit of that, but we also, because people have just kind of come together for this one sole reason of, and across the country, actually, I do have a friend in France who joins, and one my longtime friend from Indonesia, he wakes up at 4 a.m. to do it. Yeah, He's uses his practice music because his family's asleep, but it's like, are you crazy? He's like, yeah, it's fun. What are you talking about? I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So, what was I saying? Anyway.
Yeah. And I actually wanted also to talk about one of your initiatives, the Canadian Women's Brass Collective. Mm-hmm. This started in person before the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole. But we do have a pretty active online thing going on. Once a month, we have just an online series of mostly panels and topics, discussions. It is a group that I started, but I was just the instigator. We're actually literally a collective. Mm-hmm. Everyone is, and there's actually no membership. It's like, I've had people contact me, hi, how do I join? It's like, well, are you Canadian or do you live in Canada? And are you a brass player? And are you female? Well, then you're already a member, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, everyone, my own inspiration was there exists already and has existed for 25 years or more, the International Women's Brass Conference mm-hmm. that happens every 2 years. And it's always towards the end of May, and I can never go. Mm-hmm. It usually falls right on the last week of our main series, and it's like usually a very big fun piece that I don't want to miss, you know, or I wouldn't be able to miss because it's the music director on the podium. So I have attended that conference, I think once, mm-hmm. twice, but like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, and I had this like, oh, it's too bad that Canadian young players, female and male, of all genders, you know, wouldn't have access to seeing this, living this experience, because it is pretty special to look on stage and see only women playing a brass instrument.
It is. I've seen some of those videos. They're posted. Yeah. I'll put a link in the description of this video.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
And I was listening to this music and it was so beautiful, but it did strike me. Wow, that's different.
Yeah. You know, I had this kind of like, it's funny to say this, but I had this kind of like ding dong realization of like, yeah, I guess that's, it does look kind of different with me sitting up there on the back row and all these big dudes and me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no wonder why I stick out. No wonder why, not only I'm in a stick out job, like first trumpet, it sticks out anyways, you're supposed to, but I also visually, it looks, so I've always sort of seen, I just think of myself as a trumpet player, you know? But now when I see these photos of the orchestra, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that does look kind of weird, you know? Sometimes I'm the only person in the white blouse, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And everyone's in the, you know, or whatever, right? So it's, so I acknowledge that, I'm just trying to be a good trumpet player. That's it, you know? But it occurred to me like, okay, yes, I guess I am that person. Mm-hmm. That the younger female brass players like look up to me, because I had people like that. I remember being in Saskatchewan before the internet and before all the that there was. I heard that there was one woman in the Toronto Symphony brass section, mm-hmm. and at that time it was the late Joan Watson, who was associate principal horn, and then she went on to play, I don't know, 20 years of principal in the COC. And anyway, before she died. But yeah, she was like, and that was a moment of like, okay, it can be done. I could do that.
Yeah.
And then when I went to McGill, there was in the trombone section of the Montreal Symphony, Vivian Lee playing second trombone. Mm-hmm. Okay. And every week I would go and I would see like that woman, one woman in that orchestra brass mm-hmm. section. It can be done. And then I had this moment of like younger professionals who I respect and admire, girl brass players coming to me and saying, you know, you were that person for me. I was like, oh boy, here we go. Wow, I guess I am that person.
Yeah.
So then I had this thing of like, maybe I should do something. Maybe I should like, so I talked to my, anyway, so I, with the help of others, organized this weekend sort of celebration, and we just made up the name Canadian Women's Brass Collective, and somebody we got one of our members in the collective designed the website, and it was really like shoestring, and it still is shoestring. There's no money, you know, nobody makes money. It's all volunteer, but we pulled this thing off, and it was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Some of the younger players, and we had this mentoring thing with like side by side type with the young students playing with us, and like one girl said to me, "This is the greatest day of my life," you know, like I was like, holy cow, you know, this is so that. But the thing I like about this group is that it's just creating visibility. Mm-hmm. It's about mentoring and education, inspiring and creating visibility for and that it can be done, you know, that there is a opportunities and to sell. It's a really positive group celebrating you know what we know, what we've learned, who's come before us, and hopefully what's coming ahead. Mm-hmm. So
I know in the violin world, I mean, there were always female soloists, but certainly fewer than the men. It was always harder, but there was definitely a very conscious bias against women in orchestra because it was considered that the violin, I read this, I can't remember where, was too masculine of an instrument for a woman, which really seems very ridiculous. But a big change in our profession as orchestra musicians, which the public may not realize about, is that we mostly use screens in auditions.
Yeah.
And in many orchestras, it's screened all the way to the moment of hiring somebody. And as a woman, when I was doing auditions, when I was younger, I was told never wear any clicky heels, you know, so they can't tell.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a trailblazing trombonist, Abby Konant,
yep,
in Germany in the 80s, yeah, who was playing in Munich and was trying to get the solo trombone job.
Yeah.
And I checked to make sure. Yeah, the Celi Badacci, the conductor, said to her, "Well, you know, we need a man in that solo role." And she fought it, and she fought it, and she went through the courts, and she finally did win. But I think she was the person who really got the screens up. I'm not sure, but...
Well, I'm not 100% sure, yeah, but for absolutely, absolutely, she is still a major advocate for female... for equality for grass players.
Yeah.
It, you know, and we're nowhere near that. I read an article, like when I was preparing for the Women's Brass, the first conference in 2019, our mm-hmm. little 3-day event. And there was an article that came out online that said, like, of the top orchestras in the world, and they listed, you know, and there in there was one female trumpet player. In the top 20 orchestras in the world, there was one female. And, like, that's the other thing is women in leadership roles in brass or in brass sections is very... Like, I was trying to think about it the other day, and I don't think there's any other principal female trumpet players in Canada besides me. And there is one other one. There's a really famous, famous trumpet player in the States, icon, Susan Slaughter. And she started the International Women's Brass Conference. And actually, isn't that interesting that she started that and I started the Canadian one? I just made that, well, there you go, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
But Susan Slaughter in the 70s, I think it was 1976, that she won principal in St. Louis. Or 78, you know, and imagine her and Abby, like the level they must have just been incredible players to basically convince people to resist that stereotype that's there and that like that iconic thing of like, well, yeah, it's a powerful instrument. You need a man. Mm-hmm. Imagine, you know,
yeah,
that's really cool. It's very, and thank God they were there for us.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for them.
The building we work in, the National Arts Center, was built in the late 60s, around the time we were born. And it always makes me angry, but I understand it was the time that the change room is so small for the women.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a tiny bathroom. And the men's, It's huge because they just assumed, right?
Yeah. Twice as big.
Anyway, I'm very interested in your practice mentality, a little bit about your routine, because there are always commonalities across instruments. In terms of, I mean, I could ask you specific questions, but I'm sure you can talk to that.
I'm a good practicer. I practice. I mean, I always joke, but it's true. Fear is an incredible motivator. And when you're first trumpet, like, you're letting it all hang out. There is nowhere to hide. If you are not on your game, everyone knows it. It's not the classic thing, you know, like, only your colleagues know. No, everyone knows. I have an interesting practice sort of thing that maybe normal people don't know or whatever. But several years ago, I attended a master class. I'm always curious, you know. I'm always taking lessons myself, attending master classes, trying to learn and grow and keep it fresh, you know. Because it's, you know, we've been doing this now a couple of decades. Anyway, a few years ago, I attended this masterclass with this amazing trumpet player, Tom Hooten, and he's also plays in the LA Philharmonic, actually. So he introduced this idea of using a practice chart and a timer. I use an app, a timer app that you bought. It's a very clever app. It's actually an exercise app. So, but I can customize it. So I have where I work in, because trumpet is very physical and we have to protect the muscles around, around the chops, you know, around the lips. So I work in my rest as well as what I'm going to be practicing. So I'm not super regimented, like, oh my God, the timer went off, I got to stop. You know, like I finished the phrase or I finished the etude and then you can start. But it's an incredible reminder for me to stop, take the thing off my face, and then it goes again. Oh, yeah, it's a reminder to put the thing back on because you can get lost in writing an email or get distracted. So I love keeping track. And so my practice chart, actually, it's upstairs. I was going to show you. But, like, I just write all the requirements of the technique, you know, like... slurs, sound, scales, you know, all the things. Like, but for us also, you would be type of bow, but for us, it's like the different kind of tonguing, the multiple tonguing, double tongue, single tongue, K tongue, triple tongue. You know, you got to check all those off. Ranges, got to check all those off. Because it's a little bit like, I suppose it's probably the same for you, but like, it's like cooking a meal. Like if you leave a pot unattended, it's going to burn. Or you leave a pot unattended, it's going to go cold either way, right? You know, so you have to make sure you're stirring all the pots, so touching all the things. So I go through this cycle of, and I just love the, like clear data. When I check it off, I can see what have I neglected. After a few days, I'm like, oh, geez, I haven't done that for a few days. I've forgotten. So... I it's been very efficient for me and it saved my butt a few times where I've once when we were doing one of those big festivals and you know that we have like this huge stack of music that we churn through and who knows what we're rehearsing that day and that I was mixed up with the order and I thought this world premiere modern piece was going to be in 2 weeks, then I had time to work on the stuff, but lo and behold, oh my God, this thing is tomorrow and it's got all this huge stuff, blah 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 blah. And luckily, I'd been working on all that stuff in my practice chart that I got away with it, you know. But the chart saved my butt, basically.
Do you have do you like using metronome apps where the beats drop out? You know, I've heard some people like that.
Oh, what's that? What app is that?
One of our brass colleagues told me about that. Yeah, it's like it goes and then it stops for a few beats so you see how true your rhythm is.
Oh my God, that's so cool. No, I don't know I don't know what that is. I got to check that out.
Yeah. I believe Doug Burden told me about that.
Oh, I better check it out. I know, yeah. I know who to talk to. Thank you. No, no. I like to use the metronome a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice to... I record myself a lot, too.
Yeah. And in vibrato, I don't even know how you guys produce it, honestly. If it's diaphragm or chops or what's going on there.
I notice you ask everybody about vibrato.
Of course, it's huge. It's an obsession of mine.
Well, that's cool. There are ways to do vibrato, like on the trumpet. We can use lip vibrato, so just whoa, 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 whoa with the lips. Mm-hmm. You can use hand vibrato, mm-hmm. actually moving the thing on your lips, whoa, 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 or kind of a combo of both, you know. Mm-hmm. You can use the tongue, yeah, a little bit. I should explain that I forgot to put my hair elastic around the third slide here.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it drops down. And like actually lowers the tone it will lower the pitch by a tone. So when I was using the mute, I forgot to. Yes, so that's why I had to like do a quick.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Elastic.
Yeah.
Normally, that would be in place. That wasn't part of the.
What did they do before elastics? Like, is it always part of the?
Well, I think you can hold your instrument up a little higher and because mm-hmm. gravity is going to cause that. And mm-hmm. if it's a well-functioning slide, which hopefully it is, it's going to slide very sensitively.
Mm-hmm.
So to adjust intonation. So I used the first slide to adjust intonation because that one was stabilized by the trumpet nerd talk.
Well, and you have many trumpets.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about your trumpet collection.
Well, My friends make fun of me. Well, a carpenter needs her tools mm-hmm. in the toolbox. So, yeah. So, I do have maybe like 40 trumpets or something.
No. I really thought it was a dozen.
Oh, what? No. Wow. Yeah,
we
have B-flat trumpet. Mm-hmm. C trumpet, D, E flat, piccolo, mm-hmm. flugelhorn, cornet, rotary trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the families of rotary, B flat mm-hmm. rotary, C rotary,
okay,
D rotary, family of cornet, B flat cornet, C cornet, E flat cornet. I own several B flats because they're different models and different mm-hmm. different sounds and different. So I have a big B flat that I would use if I was ever playing a big sonata, like a German sonata, Hindemith sonata. I would use a heavier B flat. This is sort of mid range B flat. That's my normal everyday B flat. If I'm playing a pop show, I have a very light, smaller bore, so it's much easier to project and play high. I have a B flat for that. I have the first B flat my parents bought me in grade 8 or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, so things like that. And then go through the same thing for C trumpet. I have a nice rotation of C trumpets that are all good, thankfully for us. Like, trumpets aren't that expensive mm-hmm. compared to you guys. Mm-hmm. You probably spend more on your bow than I spend on one professional level trumpet.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so... That's why I can have, and they're not, they're not all, some of them are. Oh, yeah, and then natural trumpet. I play a little bit of natural trumpet, so I have a few of those, you know.
Tell us just a little bit about that, because not everyone understands about that.
Oh, yeah. So the history of the trumpet, mm-hmm. historically, the instrument didn't have valves.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the, like, music, for example, like Mozart symphonies, Haydn symphonies, Schubert, Schumann, did I say Beethoven? The instrument had no valves, so we could only play. That's why the trumpet is mostly a supportive role, mm-hmm. mostly doubling with the timpani. And so we would only be able to play the notes on the harmonic series, the open notes, like. Mm-hmm. So, and I just get those notes by adjusting lips and airspeed. Mm-hmm. And then. So historically, that's why, you know, like, we often play just one note or fanfare, you know? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's common. So and the valve, the first, I mean, they invented this valve, the piston valve, but they went through all sorts of different, historically, they went through keys like you'd see on a saxophone, like clapped keys on the, to create, and actually the most famous trumpet concerto by Haydn was premiered on a keyed trumpet, so not a valved trumpet. So that was pretty incredible to hear to an instrument to be able to play in that range, a diatonic scale, because we would only be able to play the diatonic scale in the upper notes of the harmonic series, because it gets closer together. So
okay, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, you know, band teachers have to teach all the brass, you know, they have to do all that. How different is it for you if you, for fun, try to play a tuba or trombone or
French horn? It's very different. Yeah. I mean, the size of the mouthpiece, you know, is the trombone is, like, for sure that much bigger, and tuba is like that, you know? So you've got, horn is smaller here, you know, so you've got this whole range. It is the same mechanics. I think it's sort of like the same mechanics of playing a viola to a violin, maybe. But physically, of course, you engage a wider vibration that creates a sound on the lips, like a trombone mouthpiece would go to here, and a tuba mouthpiece, you know. So, and because the notes are, the range is lower, the vibrations are slower. But for sure, like, I theoretically could play all the, I understand, but I did try to play the trombone once. It's hilarious. It requires a lot more air, but it's so essentially the same production.
When you chose to play the trumpet, was it the sound, or did someone just say, we need a trumpet player in the band?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. Like, my mom, and like you mentioned, I come from a big family, and my mom had the rule of we all had to take piano lessons for at least one year. I only did it for 1 year. And we all had to go in band.
Oh, okay.
Grade six. So because I come from a large family, I'll say, you know, we weren't rolling in dough. Let's just say that. We weren't starving by any means, but there was definitely a culture of hand-me-downs, and it was just simply ingrained, like, in our being of being frugal and not wasteful. So when grade six came along, I have a twin sister. That's her right there. And my mom said to us, okay, you girls, you're going to join band and you can pick any instrument you want. But just remember, we already have a flute and a trumpet in the house because my older siblings played those instruments. Well, that was like read between the lines, you know. So my twin sister picked the flute. So I got stuck with the trumpet, and that's how it worked. There you go.
And when you were in university, you didn't start out as a music major.
I was a late bloomer to being serious about music. It's funny how, like, now as I look back, I think that was, I've always felt like that was a weakness, but I also think it's a strength that I was a late bloomer, because I always had this feeling of, like, I got to catch up. Because I did. I mean, I did. I had my first trumpet lesson, private trumpet lesson, was in my second year of university.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. You string players are probably, you start when you're young. Yeah. So, but I was lucky. My band program in Saskatchewan, where I grew up, I mean, it was huge. I had an incredible exposure. Like, I played in the band, in a jazz band, a jazz combo, a brass quintet, chamber music. We had a marching band, which is super fun. We had an honor band, like all-star band, where all the... So I was playing at this with these, I was playing all the time every day. Mm-hmm. And so I was developing control just by playing. Mm-hmm. But the technique, like specific technique, was very slow. And I actually kind of still struggle to this day. Like, I wish I had somebody rattling every week about this third finger positioning, because that still sort of haunts me and is a main focus. Like, I check that box on the chart every day. But, you know, and I think if I had a teacher as a young player, I maybe wouldn't have as much trouble. I don't know. But like I said, I had this feeling of like, oh my God, I catch up. Like, I didn't even know the repertoire. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know anything. I didn't know I have double tongue. I didn't know anything. Like, anyway. And so, but that feeling of like being curious and always wanting to learn, I feel like has kept me engaged in the job. Mm-hmm. Whereas perhaps other people would become bored or complacent if they had like been, had this intensive study. So, yeah.
There's one more thing I wanted to touch on before we end our conversation, is the issue of auditions and excerpts. And I noticed with the Canadian Women's Brass Collective online, like it was listed that you had an excerpt competition with prize money, which is so cool. And the generation I grew up and where I studied at McGill in Indiana, there's no one was teaching excerpts. There was no, as a string player, like a lot of us maybe were interested in playing in an orchestra, but no one was teaching that stuff. But for brass players, it's completely different.
Yeah, I would say brass and winds.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a real focus. Yeah, there's classes dedicated to that. Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely part of the training. Intense work on. Actually, I just recently was doing this sort of online trumpet conference. And this guy, famous orchestral principal in America, major, big, one of the big five American orchestras, he's talking about pictures on exhibition, you know, like, I don't have perfect pitch. Do you have perfect pitch?
No.
Oh, anyway, whatever. Dun, 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 you know, da, da, da. So this very famous trumpet excerpt, and he was went in this in-depth explanation of how he prepares that. Like, right from, like, he plays the whole excerpt on just the first note. And then he does it. Yeah, and then he does it on the first. Does a loop. A loop, like just to get like super minutia attention to detail. But I mean, he sounds amazing. I guess that's what we got to do. Yeah.
That's what we do. No, we all work differently, right? Different things work for different people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so you're often on audition panels, and I know you've done audition training and coaching. Is there any kind of general advice you'd give to people doing auditions?
That's a great question. Wow. You know, I always advocate, like, I teach, like, many of us, like, you got to have the golden three, the trilogy, sound, pitch, rhythm.
Yeah.
Right? So if you don't have those blocks, you're done. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Then once you have those things, then it's the music. Then you got to show the style. Then you got to show your musicianship. Then you got to show, you know, that you're willing to say something and take a risk. But you have to have the magic three have to be. Yeah. And those are hard, harder than it seems.
Yeah.
To be consistent and in that moment, preparing for months, and then in that moment, being able to, like, but I will also say my experience of being on a panel is the panel wants you to play well. They want to hear somebody who's awesome. They want you to do well. They want to hire somebody.
Yeah.
So I think people think we're sit there back, we're there judging or whatever, but I personally feel like we're there like this.
Yeah, for sure.
Come on, let's go. Yeah, show me. You know, like, anyway, yeah.
I'm listening to for someone, I'm thinking, wow, I just love to play with them, you know.
That's the thing. That's what you want. Yeah, I love that.
Well, thanks so much for this conversation. I'm really glad we could make this happen.
And I hope to see you for asking.
In person soon.
Absolutely.
Season 1 of this podcast had 20 episodes, and Season 2 continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.